Bill's from Ridgely, Long Island. Somewhere Long Island. Five Towns?
Yeah.
Okay. And
but before it became the Five Towns.
Right. But I remember Yeshua while we were living in Israel, while I was engaged in a program called Amiel, which focuses on training rabbis and educators to go abroad and try to bring some more goodness and be part of communities and help grow communities. So everything good I have is from Rav Yehoshua. Everything bad is my stuff. No, but if I just had to say one thing, Rav Yehoshua came all the way from Israel and really went out of his way, but to come here to Stony Brook, and he didn't see it out of his way, but really made the point of coming here to just see the community, just get a feel for the place, and we got to spend time together. So I'm only sharing that because it shows how much Amiel in general, and Rav Yehoshua, who's the placement director of Amiel, invest in wanting to see communities succeed. So thank you for being here and willing to give this talk.
Thank you, Rabbi Bergman, and a double thank you. First of all, for the praises. It's always a pleasure to hear my own eulogy while I'm alive. And secondly, for the willingness to come to Stony Brook and to serve the community and to be devoted to it and to ask questions about it and to be engaged in the dilemmas that the community is engaged in constantly. I think you and your wife, Nora, deserve all the thanks in the world for your willingness to come here, and Be'ezrat Hashem, with God's help, you should be able to succeed in all the various endeavors we discussed throughout the year, amongst them today, and God willing, you'll be able to succeed to see them come to fruition.
Amen.
Ladies, gentlemen, I really enjoy coming to teach Torah out of Israel. When I come out of Israel, I always come to, of course, various reasons, amongst them to visit graduates like Rabbi Uri and Nora Bergman. However, it's always an added pleasure to actually fulfill the words of the sages that there's three basic reasons, the only basic, that you can leave Israel for. And one of the three is to teach Torah. So I'm happy for this opportunity to share with you a few thoughts about this week's Parsha of Bo. And in order to make it a bit easier for you and for me, we prepared a few source sheets so you can pass them around. You can, of course, be welcome to look in the Chumashim on the table. But if you'd like, everything, of course, is on the source sheet as well.
What are the other two reasons?
The other two reasons is to marry a woman, and to if you need it for livelihood, you can also leave Israel. I have a masoret, a tradition from my own Rebbe and mentor, who passed away this year, Rabbi Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. May God give peace to his soul, any kaparat mishkavo, who said that our sages only are giving examples. But basically what they're saying is that you can leave Israel for things that don't exist in Israel. So, on a Monday night in Israel, I'm not asked to give a shir on the Parsha. But in Stony Brook, I am asked to give a shir on the Parsha. So that in and of itself is a good reason to come and to be with you. Baruch atah Adonai Mechalam Shekhanim B'dvaro. And I want to really thank the Richmonds for hosting us this evening, and for the tea that, because of the climate change between Israel, Seattle, and now Stony Brook, Long Island, I definitely appreciate even more. What I'd like to speak about tonight is the element of time as it comes about in this week's Parsha. This week's Parsha, as you know, is Parshat Bo. It's one of the shortest Parshas in names, but it has a lot in it in terms of content, because once a year, as you all know, this Parsha comes alive. Anybody know when?
Pesach.
Pesach. The laws of the eve of Pesach through the holiday of Pesach are delineated in this week's Parsha. And even the aftermath of the events of Pesach, such as wearing tefillin every day, and other things we do to remember the emergence from going from servitude to freedom, is written in this week's Parsha. I would like to focus, however, this evening on one element of Pesach that I believe is overlooked. Because as we get ready for Pesach, I believe we deal with two things. First and foremost, what do we deal with? Chametz! Getting rid of the chametz. We all know that that's what we basically do for 30 days prior to Pesach, and for some women and even men out there, it's more than a month's activity. And the second thing we really invest efforts into is, of course, what? Telling the story, or to be more precise, the Seder itself. What I would like to speak to about tonight, and this is what I like to speak about when I come outside of Israel, is what I call in halacha, mate mitzvah. If God forbid there's a dead body and no one's burying it, it's your obligation to bury it. There are certain elements of our Jewish lifestyle that we don't talk about too much because there's no time. So we invest a lot of time and effort and classes into getting rid of chametz. We even, thank God, invest a lot of time and effort and classes into the Seder night. But once the two Seder nights are over outside of Israel, I don't think we invest time in the topic of this evening. And that is on the top of the Yeshor sheet. Endless times in the Torah, where the Torah tells us that throughout the holiday of Pesach, we should eat matzah. In this week's Parsha, twice, on the top of your source sheet, you'll see, both in chapter 12 and chapter 13 in this week's Parsha, it says, Shivat Yamim Matzot Tochelu, or in another version, Shivat Yamim Tochal Matzot. For 7 days, you shall eat matzah. It's not just in this week's Parsha, it's twice again in the book of Shemot, as you can see in the next two sources on the sheet. It's again repeated in the book of Vayikra, in the book of Bamidbar, in the book of Devarim. All in all, except for the book of Bereshit, 4 out of the 5 books of the Torah, God tells us, for 7 days, what should you do?
Eat
matzah. Outside of Israel, this means 8 days. So it doesn't just mean the Seder night, it means for 7 days. And indeed, the Gemara, our sages, were perplexed by this continuous and repetitive mention of the 7-day obligation, quote-unquote, to eat matzah. And therefore, the next source in the sheet, the Gemara in Pesachim, Daf Tzadik Aleph Amud Bet, 2091b, says, Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught, Pesach Matzah Umaror. You are familiar with that phrase from the Seder night. Pesach Matzah Umaror, the 3 things you have to say on the Seder night. On the first night, it's obligatory. From here on, it's optional. So therefore, the Gemara is quick to point out that if you would like to eat matzah on the rest of the 7 days of Pesach, there's no obligation. However, there is a mitzvah. However, on the first night of the Seder and outside of Israel, on the 2 nights of the Seder, there's an obligation. So, throughout the holiday of Pesach, it's optional. But on the nights of the Seder, it's obligatory. Now, what does that mean? Just to paraphrase it, the Gra, but he wasn't the first, many before him, were quick to point out, Rav Eliyahu Mivilna, who lived in the 18th century in Vilna, says that you have to eat matzah for 7 days, if you would like to. And there's many optional mitzvot in the Torah. Anybody here around the table know any other optional mitzvot in the Torah that you don't have to do, but if you do them, you fulfill a mitzvah?
Why shave a sukkah?
Sitting in a sukkah. No one says you have to eat a big meal on Sukkot. No one says you have to have bread and cookies and whatnot. You can survive on potato chips and apples. And you never once, after the first and second night of Sukkot, make the bracha of Leishev Basukkah. But if you would like to eat a proper meal, or Shabbos Chol HaMoed, or any other of the Yom Tovs, you have to eat bread, you're going to make a Leishev Basukkah. Any other examples? I'll give you an example from my own family. I'm a rabbi, so I have to make a living. So therefore, I married a lawyer. It's a very easy way to make a living. My wife's a divorce lawyer. Is there a mitzvah of divorce in the Torah? How many people here went to sleep last night saying, "Oy, I didn't fulfill the mitzvah of divorcing my wife yet"?
It's mentioned.
It's Absolutely, it's mentioned.
Well, it's not mentioned as a mitzvah of divorce. It's mentioned of what you have to do if you want to get
divorced. Exactly. How would we call that, Dr. Eben?
How do we call it?
An optional mitzvah. If and when the circumstances call for it, if and when there's divorce on the table, there's a way to do it. There's a procedure of giving a get to your wife. And that's a mitzvah, if and when it's called for. Another example. How many people here in this table went to sleep last night and said, I never slaughtered an animal. My whole life I never took a knife to the neck of an animal and did it. The answer is, you don't have to slaughter an animal. No one's going to hold you in contempt of the Torah if you don't slaughter an animal. But if and when you want to eat meat, there's a procedure. And you even make a bracha on slaughtering an animal. So too, says the Gemara, there's a mitzvah in the Torah of matzah throughout the 7 days of Pesach, as you can see on the chart on the top of the sheet, of which two of them are mentioned in our parsha, number 1 and 2, Shivat Yamim Matzot Tochelu, for 7 days you should eat matzah, and in Perek Yud Gimel, in the 13th chapter of Shmot, which is towards the end of our parsha, Shivat Yamim Tochal Matzot, for 7 days you should eat matzot. But says the Gemara, based on the Gemara, that's an optional mitzvah, just like divorce and shechita, just like divorce and slaughtering an animal, and many other optional mitzvot that we have in the Torah, such as putting tzitzis on a four-cornered garment. If you don't wear a four-cornered garment, no one's going to hold you in contempt for not wearing tzitzit. However, if and when you wear a four-cornered garment, what do you have to do? Put tzitzit on the four corners. Says the Gra, this is basically the mitzvah we see in our parsha, and that is that throughout the holiday of Pesach, after the 2 nights of the Seder, there's an optional mitzvah on the books. If you want to fulfill it, great. If you don't want to fulfill it, no problem, to eat matzah.
How do you tell when it's optional and when it's not?
Is there any other optional mitzvah that is mentioned?
The answer, I believe.
Yeah.
Your name?
Barbara.
Barbara? Eben. So Barbara Eben, if the oral Torah didn't tell us this, we'd have no idea. Because in the verses we see, every single one of them seems to command us to eat matzah for 7 days. However, the oral Torah has two points of view, one of which I won't deal with tonight, and that is that there is no mitzvah commandment to eat matzah, but rather it's just the means not to eat chametz. Namely, there's nothing else to eat, so you eat matzah. However, if you can get by with various other things, like matzah meal-free ice cream cones, with matzah meal-free ice cream, no mitzvah to eat matzah. The point of view I'd like to bring about this evening is what I believe is the pshat of the psukim, the actual simple interpretation of the psukim, as we see in this week's parsha, and this sefer of Shmot, as well as Vayikra Bamidbar and Devarim. And that is that there is a mitzvah, albeit it's an optional mitzvah, which is what the Gemara says. So Mrs. Eben, without the oral Torah, we'd have no idea. No idea. We'd probably think it's an obligation. The oral Torah says, take it easy, it's not an obligation, it's optional. Now just to paraphrase what it means to be optional, and on the other hand, a fulfillment of the mitzvah, I brought a few ramifications on the source sheet, and I'll just point out two. Number one, the Bala Maor. The Bala Maor was a sensational Rishon, meaning the medieval interpreters on the Talmud. He was always sensational, but he has the following point of view. In Mesechet Pesachim, he gives a reason why we don't make a bracha on eating matzah past the Seder night. As you all know, on the Seder night, you don't just say Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz on matzah. What else do we say? Asher kiddishanu b'mitzvot avitzivanu, you have commanded us in your Torah and sanctified us to eat the matzah. We don't say that on the third and fourth and fifth and sixth day of Pesach. Says the Bala Maor, his real name, by the way, was not Bal HaMaor, which means in Hebrew, the head of the moon. He lived in a place called Lunil. Lunil means moon in that language. Anyone know which language?
French,
very good. And he wrote the Maor HaKatan, the small moon because he lived in a place called Luniel. But then when he got to Bava Kama, he felt he couldn't write the small moon because it was too hard. So he wrote the Ma'ara Gadol, the big moon. So apparently, the first few tractates of the Talmud he wrote when the moon was small. And then, as the moon got bigger, towards the 15th of the month, he wrote the others. Because he said he needed more concentration. In any case, Rav Zachariah Levi basically is forced to give a reason why we don't make a bracha every time we eat matzah throughout the holiday. Now, what does he clearly assume? That there is a mitzvah. Now he is forced to give a reason why we don't make a bracha. But obviously his assumption is that there is a mitzvah, and therefore there should be a bracha. He gives a reason why not. But quite frankly, he's assuming that there is a mitzvah, and there should be a bracha. Number two, just to paraphrase this point that there is a mitzvah, the Tosfot. The Tosfot, who is of course printed on every page of the Talmud, the Tosfot, who is the grandchildren of Rashi, basically says, and this is a point of controversy, that you don't wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed of Pesach and Chol HaMoed of Sukkot. Why? Because every Jewish male needs two signs. One is his circumcision, and the other is another sign. Throughout the week, what's the other sign? Tefillin. Shabbos, in and of itself, is a sign. Yontif, holidays, in and of itself, is a sign. Says the Tosfot, so is Chol HaMoed. Why? Because on Chol HaMoed Sukkot, you don't just get up in the morning, brush your teeth, and go about your day. Where do you eat breakfast? In the sukkah. So that, in and of itself, is a sign. And says the Tosfot, following his own logic, on Pesach, you don't just go about your day and eat lunch. What do you eat? Matzah. And matzah is a mitzvah, just like sukkah. And therefore, both the Tosfot and the Bala Maor assume that eating matzah throughout the holiday of Pesach is a mitzvah. Albeit, based on the Gemara I quoted, it's an optional mitzvah. Meaning, if you go through an entire day of Chol HaMoed Pesach and you don't eat matzah, no one's going to hold you accountable. But if you do eat matzah, then what?
You get a mitzvah.
Not just any mitzvah, a mitzvah from the Torah. Because as we see in the psukim, as we see in the verses, there's a mitzvah to eat matzah. Succinctly, the Aruch HaShulchan says, in a very nice, beautiful way, I cannot talk this way, but if you're the Aruch HaShulchan living on the verge of the 20th century in a town called Nirvadik, maybe you can say this. Veda, you should know, dekach mekublani, this is the tradition I have. Ratzon Hashem, sheyachlu b'nei Yisrael matzah ko yemei Pesach. That it's the will of God that the children of Israel eat matzah all Pesach. Namely, it's not an obligation. It's the will of God. If you do it, you get a mitzvah. If you don't do it, it's okay. But you should know it's the will of God to eat matzah. I could not make that statement. I don't know what the will of God is other than what He told us in the Torah. And in the oral Torah, for that matter. But the Aruch HaShulchan felt he can say it's Ratzon Hashem, the will of God, you should eat matzah on Pesach. And based on that, I'd like to try this evening to explain what do we get out of eating matzah throughout Pesach. But you have a question.
Well, you don't give the reason of the Baal Hamor, but I'd like to guess that certain mitzvot are seen as one organic whole. So, for example, if there's a storm and you see lightning, you don't have to keep saying over and over, Oseh Maaseh Bereishis.
Correct.
So maybe in the same way, Pesach is 7 days. Once you've said it once at the beginning, for Al Mitzvat Matzah, that's enough for the whole...
Well, actually, he gives a different reason, though your reason is interesting. In Sukkot, every time you go to the Sukkot, you say, Asher Kedishanu Mitzvotav Etzivanu, Leishev Basukah, you've commanded us to live in the sukkah. On Pesach, we don't do that. The Baal HaMor gives a little different reason than what you're suggesting, Mr. Farb.
Yeah.
Mr. Farb basically is suggesting if you make it the first time, it covers the entire holiday. From Sukkot, we probably learn that it's not possible because on Sukkot, every time you leave the sukkah and you re-enter, you make another
bracha. But that's if you eat something, so that's like
right.
a separate meal.
So says the Baal HaMaor, along your line of logic, his reason is an interesting one. He says you can get through the entire holiday of Pesach without eating matzah. Now, quite frankly, if there's a Shabbos Chol HaMoed in the middle, you have to eat matzah. Why? Because you need Lechem Mishnah and Shabbos, you need a double loaf. You can't eat bread, so you're stuck. But this year, and if the Beis HaMikdash is not built this coming year, Pesach was Shabbos and Sunday. The last days of Pesach are Friday and Shabbos. Quite frankly, indeed, the entire days of Chol HaMoed, which were Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, into Thursday, up until the evening, you did not need to eat matzah. You can get by on potatoes and meat and chicken and many other things that perhaps your cardiologist tells you not to eat, but you eat it anyway. Says the Baal HaMaor, you can get through the entire holiday of Pesach without eating matzah outside the first two nights of the Seder and the Yontifs. However, says the Baal HaMaor, you cannot get through Sukkahs without eating in the Sukkah. You know why?
Starve.
Well, not necessarily. He says you can get by on potato chips and apples. But there's something else. A well-known secret. When I lived here in Long Island, it was a secret. I didn't know it till I get to Israel. That apparently, not only do you have to eat in the sukkah,
sleep.
You have to sleep in the sukkah. Says the Baal HaMaor, you can get by on potato chips and apples on Pesach, but you can't get by the 7 days of Pesach without eating. You can't get by the 7 days of Sukkot without sleeping. And therefore you'd have to go into the sukkah to sleep. So it's impossible to even imagine you not going into the sukkah on Chol HaMoed, says the Baal HaMaor. That's the reason he gives. Unlike Pesach, where you can get by on potato chips and apples, and you don't have to eat matzah. Together with everything else we serve on Pesach, that the cardiologists say not to eat. To make a long story short, on Pesach there's an optional mitzvah to eat matzah. Now everybody here knows why on the Seder night we eat matzah, right? How come everybody here knows?
We've been through the Haggadah a few times.
I hope you are. Everyone around this room, around this table, knows that there's a Haggadah, and in the Haggadah, it not only tells you to eat matzah, it gives you the reason. What's the reason?
We were slaves.
We were slaves, and we were led out, as recorded in this week's Parshat Bo. And we were not just led out nicely, but we were told to get out and fast. It's like a guy who wakes up late. And we were told to get up so fast that the bread could not what?
Rise
and become leavened. And because of that, to remember the way we left Egypt, that's why we eat matzah. Matzah is the souvenir of leaving Egypt in a haste. That's the Seder night. Now we finish the Seder nights. We've come to the first day of Pesach, or the second day of Pesach, or the third day of Pesach for that matter. And the Torah tells us to eat matzah 7 days. What's the reason for that? Haggadah didn't tell us the reason for that. Because once the Jews left in a haste, they left in a haste. That's over with. Now why do we continue eating matzah throughout the holiday?
Because they liked it so much.
And it's still running.
It was delicious.
I always just thought of it as because you couldn't eat bread. I never thought of it as it was a commandment to eat the matzah.
What's your name?
Sherry.
Sherry, the Baal HaItur and many others indeed interpret the psukim in this week's parsha as saying, in other words, you only eat matzah because there's nothing else to eat. There's no mitzvah. It's like, there's nothing else to eat, you got to eat matzah. It's like the guy that's stuck in the airport and he's in a delay of 10 hours and he goes to the concession stand and there's lobster and there's meat and everything else that's not kosher, but there's a Hershey's bar. And as long as he's relying on Rav Moshe Feinstein, it's kosher. So he eats chocolate. Says the Baal HaItur and other Rishonim, there's no mitzvah to eat matzah. It's like you got nothing else to eat. However, I have to admit that even though the Baal HaItur is one of the Rishonim and I am like an ant compared to that elephant, I have to admit that I don't think it really coincides with our Parsha and with many other Parshas. Because it says for 7 days eat matzah. It doesn't say for 7 days, don't eat chametz and manage. What are you going to manage with? Matzah meal, matzah meal cakes, knedel lach and whatnot, depending on your gebrochs, non-gebrochs policy. Doesn't say that. It says, eat matzah. We just demonstrated that two of the great Rishonim said it's a mitzvah to eat matzah, to the extent that one had to break his head while we don't make a bracha, and the other says, don't wear tefillin because you're eating matzah. It's enough of a sign. That's what I'd like to this evening talk about, those particular points of view. But Sherry is correct. There is another point of view that says there's no mitzvah to eat matzah past the Seder night. It's only a means not to eat chametz. The reason I have a problem with that is, as I mentioned, A, I think it goes against the simple reading of saying 7 days eat matzah.
Yeah, it's just I haven't thought about it that way. That's right. What I'm saying, not that I don't...
Right, I believe that if it said 7 days don't eat chametz, then I would definitely say, we got no class tonight. But because it says 7 days eat matzah, I'd like to understand the reason as to why do you eat matzah past the second Seder. What's the reason for eating matzah past the second Seder? What does matzah symbolize in the eyes of our Torah? If you turn the page, I'd like to quote to you two halachot from the Code of Jewish Law. The Code of Jewish Law, Rav Yosef Karo, when he codified the law, he says as follows, and I quote it in the English. One is not allowed to leave the dough without working on it, even for 1 minute. Says the Code of Jewish Law, when you make matzah and you have dough in your hands, dough is made up, let's say, of flour and water, you have to constantly knead the dough. If you're not working on it, then if you just leave it the way it is, says the Code of Jewish Law, as long as you work on it, it doesn't leaven. However, if you don't leave it as it is, without working on it, if you just leave it on the table, and you don't work on it, that's the words he used. In Hebrew, he says, kol zman shemitaskim bo, says the Code of Jewish Law, for the amount of time it takes to walk a meal, it becomes chametz. That's the famous law, that if you leave dough for more than 18 minutes, because that's how long it takes to walk a meal, it becomes chametz. A meal is an amount of time that the sages used to say 18 minutes. Today we talk in terms of minutes. In the times of the sages, they like to talk in terms of superlatives. So they said meal. They didn't say in the morning when you get up and it becomes a little light, you can put on your tzitzit, you said Mishiach Kirit Chaviro Arba Amot. They didn't say, when it's a little light, you can put on your tzitzit. They said, when you know that you see your friend across the street and you know it's his friend based on his nose and his glasses, then you can put on tzitzit. The sages talked in terms of superlatives, and the Code of Jewish Law codified it. But from our perspective, we can say in the year 2016, 18 minutes. So basically, what is the Code of Jewish Law saying? I like to say he's saying a beautiful song here. He's not just making a halachic statement, he's making a fundamental Jewish statement. Though, as long as you deal with it, as you're concerned with it, which literally means when you're needing it, you can take all day. If you want to do like this all day, like those famous things that they give you for arthritis, what are those things called?
Squeeze
stress balls.
Stress balls, squeeze, what are those squeeze things? The squeeze things.
Yes.
I wish I had one of those. Every time I get a disturbing phone call, instead of smashing the phone, I use one of those squirts thing. They'll squeeze things. Anyway, now you can see I come from New York. I'm very aggressive. To make a long story short, says the Shulchan Aruch that if you basically have the dough and you're dealing with it the entire time, it doesn't become chametz. You can spend all day. The minute you leave it the way it is, if 18 minutes passed, it becomes chametz. It becomes leavened. Now, the easiest thing to do, therefore, is to probably, for Pesach, not use dough. Because if you leave the dough, it's going to become chametz. So what's the easiest thing to do? Don't use dough. In your kitchen, do you use dough? Probably not. You use matzah meal at most, but that's where it ends. You don't take dough, make cookies, and make sure within 18 minutes it's in the oven. You use other things. But says the Shulchan Aruch, based on the Gemara and the next source, that the only kosher matzah for the Seder night, and subsequently for the optional mitzvah later on the holiday, is dough that's made of what? Of the five kinds of grains. Wheat, barley, rye, oats, and spelt. In other words, what do we do on Pesach? We take the most radioactive material, namely grain that could become chametz, because it comes in contact with water, and it could become chametz just by leaving it. But if you work on it, if you deal with it, if you don't just let it slide, then within 18 minutes or even more, as long as you're kneading it, if it's in the oven, it's okay. In my humble opinion, this is exactly what Judaism is asking of us, not just on Pesach, but throughout the year. Pesach is the first holiday of the year. How do I know that? In this week's parsha, it says that the first month of the year is Nisan. This month should be the head of your months. Rishon hu lachem lachodshei hashana is the first month for all the months of the year. So basically, the first holiday of the year, God obviously is very, very smart into how human beings react. And we all know that one of the things we psychologically react to is first impressions. So the first impression we get when a person walks into the room stays stuck in our heads. Because I place rabbis and educators, one of the things I have to do is to prep people for interviews. Amongst the things I prep them for, it's not just you're going to a wonderful community with wonderful people. There is something called first impression. What's first impression? The way you walk into the room. If you walk in, excuse me for my Yiddish, like a schlump, they're going to say you're disorganized. You can be the most organized person in the world. You return every email within 2 minutes. You return every phone call within 4 minutes. Every text within 6 minutes. Every WhatsApp within 8 minutes. And every Facebook message within 10. But if you walk in like a schlump, the interviewer will say, the guy is disorganized. If his hair is not made up, if his shirt is not ironed, they're going to say he's a schlump. First impressions count. So the first holiday of the year counts. The first holiday of the year in our yearly calendar is Pesach, because it's the first month of the year. Because on this first month, God said, Shivat yamei matzot tochelu, Shivat yamei matzot tochal. In various different ways, God said to eat matzah. In my humble opinion, God is giving us a message. And what's the message? In life, don't let things just lay there. Don't just say, let's close our eyes, pretend that it doesn't exist, and God willing, everything will be okay, God will help us in every language you know, and it will be okay. In Hebrew we say Hashem Ya'azor, in English we say God willing, in Yiddish we say the Ebershter von Helfen, and we can go through many different languages where we basically say, just leave it, and it'll be okay. God is telling us, don't leave it. Don't just leave things the way they are, but deal with it. Don't just say, put on the TV, and there happens to be a repulsive, disgusting program on, just leave it, we'll be okay, you know, what can we do? We can't control TV. Change the channel. You get onto the internet, and you don't have a pop-up blocker, and all of a sudden the pop-up comes up, which is disgusting. Don't say, well, what can I do? I use the internet. I'm a modern Orthodox Jew. That's what modern Orthodox Jews do. Exit out. And so too with the education of children. We can't just sit back and relax and say, yeah, we'll be okay. You know, they go to good schools. They have good friends. We don't have to do much. Parents have to take responsibility over their children. And it's not easy. And it's difficult. And it's, I would even say, very sophisticated today in the world of internet and cell phones and whatnot, when there's so many influences coming into their lives beyond their parents and teachers. But if we let that dough rise by just leaving it there, then God forbid, chaos can happen and tragedy can happen. At best, even if, God forbid, our children and grandchildren don't turn out the way we would like, at least we can say, as the Shulchan Aruch says so beautifully, Lo yanichu ha'isa below esek. We didn't leave the dough without dealing with it. We gave it our best shot. We invested in it. But it didn't work. It happens. It happens. But if, God forbid, we just left it the way it is, in the sense of, we didn't deal with our children's lives, we just let them, you know, slide by. They're in good schools, they're in good neighborhoods, nothing should have happened to them. So if anything happened to them, we'll blame the whole world, except for ourselves. We'll just leave the dough the way it is, without kneading it, without dealing with it. I think the Torah is telling us, that's not the way to go. And therefore, on the first holiday of the year, we go radical. How radical do we go? We don't let the dough rise. Oh, to be more precise, we don't let the dough stay there without dealing with it for 18 minutes. And 18 minutes is nothing. Go on the train. What's 18 minutes? A commute to New York City takes more time. 18 minutes from Stony Brook to New York City is a nothing. It's the beginning of a long journey. But even in 18 minutes can be critical on the holiday of Pesach. And so critical, because we take the five kinds of grains which can become chametz, not rice that can't become chametz, not legumes that can't become chametz, but the real McCoy, the grains. And if we just leave it the way it is, and we don't deal with it, then God forbid it can become chametz. And therefore the Rokeach, who's quoted at the end of the source sheet, says something unimaginable. He says, Ha'ochel matzah ki ilchata shivat yamim. Whoever eats matzah properly, according to the law, for 7 days, it is like he became a partner in God in creating the world. Ki'ilu na'asa shutav la'kadosh baruch hu b'ma'aseh v'reshit. Can anyone explain the corollary between those two statements? What does creating the world have to do with matzah?
Well, Hashem didn't let it slide. He made the whole world before Shabbos.
Finished on time.
Creating the world
is like Hashem didn't let it slide in the sense of He put in the laws of chemistry and physics and biology and everything else in 6 days. He didn't just say, let the tohu vavo, let the chaos continue. What do we do on Pesach? We don't let the matzah rise, the dough rise. We deal with it in order for it not to rise. We ensure that it doesn't rise. And so too, when there's so many influences around us and we're creating children and grandchildren and the next generation of leaders of the Jewish people, we can't just say, let's close our eyes and hope it will be okay. We have to deal with it. We have to constantly deal with it. And therefore, if you're willing to do that, in the sense of, if you're willing to eat proper matzah that you dealt with, didn't just let it slide, which is chametz matzahs. My grandparents did have a grocery store in New York when I was growing up, and I remember chametz matzahs throughout the year. In Israel, I've barely seen them. But in America, I truly remember, before we made Aliyah when I was 11, seeing chametz matzahs. What's chametz matzahs? Yeah, not for Passover use. More than 18 minutes. You let the dough sit there.
Now you get non-matzah matzah.
What's that mean?
Right, that was a big thing. Gluten-free matzah this year. We saw it in Stop and Shop.
If you're willing to treat the creations we make, it could be our children, it can be our communities, it can be our acquaintances, like matzah. Namely, don't let things slide, but actually deal with them. Then you're shutaf lakadosh baruch hu, you're a partner to God. Just like Dr. Eben said, just like God didn't let the world slide, He created it in 7 days with laws of biology, chemistry, physics, and whatnot. So too, we don't let the world slide. We don't let things slide by. And therefore, the title of this class was Timing is Everything. If you let things slide by, unfortunately, they'll slide in ways that you don't want it to slide. If you deal with it, then God willing, you'll be successful. But even if you're not successful, at least you can, after 120 years, go to your grave and say, I gave it my best shot. I didn't let the dough rise. I dealt with it. Maybe I didn't succeed, but I dealt with it. I gave it my best shot. Nobody succeeds 100% in anything they do. It's impossible. Anyone here that ever decided to be a handyman, Jackie Mason makes a living out of this, as you know. You all know what happens. The first screw goes in beautifully, the second screw goes in tremendously amazing, and the third screw goes in the wrong place. There's no such thing as perfection in this world. Until the coming of Messiah, I am convinced there's no perfection. At the end of the Seder, if you recall, if you're up and you're not, and you're still sober, and the four cups of wine didn't get you to go to sleep, there is a beautiful song that says, Karev Yom, the day is coming near, Asher Hu Lo Yom Velo Laila. It's not a day of darkness and light like we have today, but a day of pure light. Everything's going to be perfect and wonderful. But we're living in a world of darkness and light right now. Not everything is perfect. No one succeeds 100%. But I think each and every one of us have an obligation to at least be able to say to God after 120 years, I gave it my best shot. I didn't let the dough just rise. And therefore, going back to the beginning of the class, why does God command us for 7 days to eat matzah as an optional mitzvah? To educate us. Don't let things slide by. Timing is everything. We have just a very few amount of years to influence and to inspire. Don't let it slide by. Don't let it rise. Eat the matzah and internalize. First of all, literally, because you're eating that matzah, and we all know what that does to your digestion system. And secondly, emotionally, internalize that matzah is the food we have where we didn't let it slide by. Within the 18 minutes, it was in the oven. Or we constantly dealt with it before the 18 minutes, so there wasn't an 18-minute gap where we just let it slide by. And that's why I believe timing is everything. And if you think of the Jewish calendar, and specifically of Pesach, timing is everything. Let's think about Pesach. What's 30 days before Pesach mark? Purim. You got it, Purim. It also marks another important milestone, mostly on the calendars of women, I hope of men as well. If you're at home within 30 days before Pesach, you have to clean your house for Pesach. Whether you go away or you don't go away, you got to rid your house of chametz. How you do that, the easy way out by selling your house, the hard way out by cleaning your house, you got to clean your house of chametz. Timing is everything. 31 days, you don't have to clean your house. Erev Pesach, you get up in the morning, you say, Kol chamira v'chamira d'ika b'rishuti, every chametz I have is like hefker, it's ownerless, it's like dust. You don't have to clean anything. But if you're home within 30 days, namely you're eating humantashens at home on Purim, you got to clean your house. Then comes the eve of Pesach. The eve of Pesach is the day before Pesach. This year, if things don't change, Thursday night. Thursday night at nightfall. What comes upon you? Bedikat chametz. Checking your house for chametz. If you're not home, as I said, within 30 days, you have to check your house for chametz beforehand. But timing is everything. 30 days versus 31 days. The night of Pesach, before Pesach, you make a bracha. If it's 2 nights before Pesach, because you're going away to a hotel if you're lucky, and if you're not as rich as me, maybe you're going to your in-laws or your parents, or to your relatives or your children, you don't make a bracha. Timing is everything. Erev Pesach in the morning, you got to be nuts. A Jew has to go nuts on the Erev Pesach in the morning. Within the fourth halachic hour of the day, you can't eat chametz. Within the fifth halachic hour of the day, you got to get rid of your chametz. Either burn it or sell it, etc. Within the sixth halachic hour of the day, biblically you can own and you can't have chametz. Then we continue through the day. By the 10th hour of the day, to be more precise, 8.5 hours into the day, you can't go ahead, to be more precise, 9.5 hours into the day, you can't eat a grain-based meal. Why? Anybody remember?
So it'll take away from your enjoyment of...
Exactly. You should have a good appetite towards the Seder. Then the Seder night comes. When can we start the Seder? Do you do an early Shabbos here, Rabbi Bergman? Sometimes?
since I've been here.
Early Shabbos. Early Shabbos, you know, everybody knows what that means, right? You accept Shabbos from Plag HaMincha. You do it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you do it on the eve of Pesach? That would be great. No?
No.
Why? Can only start at nightfall. By Erev Tachlum Matzot, you have to wait till nightfall. So, you look outside, the house is clean, the table is set, the matzah is waited to be eaten, the four cups of wine are on the table, you can't touch it till it gets dark. Pitch black, you can do it. Timing is everything. 30 days, night before Pesach, the eve of Pesach, you go crazy with, what time do I, can I eat that bagel till? What time do I have to burn the chametz? I forgot to call the rabbi to sell the chametz. Timing is everything. Finally, you're at the Seder night, it's nightfall. You sit at the head of your Seder table, you say, oh, we finally got to the Seder night. What happens then? Is a stopwatch on the table or isn't it?
Well, you still have to spend a lot of time waiting.
So our host, Mrs. Richmond, says you have to finish, preferably you have to finish, I should be precise, the Afikoman, and according to the Ran that's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, also Hallel, so we're talking about the entire Seder by midnight, by Chatzot, which is not easy, because all the kids want to say what they learned in school, and all the adults want to say what they read, and everyone wants to talk about how bad or good the matzah is this year. Then we have to speak about how terrible the prices were this year. To get all that done by Chatzot is a big challenge. But somehow we have to do it. Just the whole experience of Pesach is timing and timing and endless timing of not letting time go by. It's Chatzot, it's not Chatzot. It's the fifth hour of the day, or isn't it? Everything, we're looking at our watch, we're not letting things slide by. But it's not just Pesach. It's every single week. What happens on Friday? In a Jewish home, what happens on Friday? So four, I don't know what time Shabbos was this week in New York.
4:23, I think.
4:23, that's a killer. 4:23. So 4:20.
Better than 4:08.
4:08 is much harder.
Wait, today, yeah, it was later than last week, right?
Yeah.
We're getting later.
I always tell converts to be to Judaism, if you really want to see a Jewish home, and what it means to be a person who fears God and really takes Jewish law seriously, come to a Jewish home 15 minutes before Shabbos. Hear the screaming, the yelling, the breaking of who knows what, and then stay 15 minutes after candle lighting, and you'll experience the tranquility, the beauty. It's an amazing sight. But 4:23 comes, all bets are off. My most amazing experience I've ever experienced of Shabbos, of how the tranquility of Shabbos has to stop everything. I was in the middle of a terrible tragedy that one of my graduates was in the middle of. A tragedy that I don't wish on anyone, that you disconnect a machine from a dying patient. A breathing machine, obviously, a respiratory machine. And we were in the middle of it, and Shabbos was coming in Israel, not where he was. And I was telling him what I think he should do. And obviously it's pikuach nefesh. You can violate Shabbos for it. But in my mind I said, there's local rabbis. I don't have to be the one to violate Shabbos. So I gave him the directives. And then I told him what to do. And it was an hour before Shabbos and I was okay. Then he was nervous. He called me back twice. Kept on calling me back. Tried to take a shave before Shabbos. Didn't happen. He called me back. Shower in, shower out. He was calling me. 2 minutes to Shkia. 2 minutes to sunset. This is already after the candle lighting time of 4:24. This is 4:24 plus about 16 minutes in. This is it. And I said, you have to ask this local rabbi. I'm sorry. I don't feel I have any exemption according to the Torah to paskin this question because it's local rabbis who Shabbos is a long time from them. We're talking about a question from North America. I'm in Israel. I'm signing off now. Best of luck. That's when I always sudden understood what the Kedusha of Shabbos was. And I felt guilty all Shabbos. I kept on saying, maybe I should have stayed on the phone call. Maybe he doesn't trust the local rabbis because he's an Israeli. He knows it all. I don't know. Thank God the local rabbis did give him the proper instruction and everything worked out for the better. But quite frankly, Erev Shabbos, the eve of Shabbos, is everything. And the long Shabbos is in the summer. Isn't timing everything? Well, we just let... Well, when did Shabbos go out the latest here in Stony Brook? 9:30, according to 10?
Earlier.
9:08, I think.
9:08?
Yeah, early.
Okay. 9:08. Imagine those long Shabbos afternoons where you had that email you didn't return on Erev Shabbos, and all Shabbos you're dying to find out what happened. You can't. Finally, the timing comes, 9:08, you can return that email. Timing is everything if we don't let things slide by. And therefore, I believe at the beginning of the Jewish calendar, God commands us to eat a piece of matzah which has the ability to become chametz, which you're not allowed to eat on Pesach, and it's a cardinal sin with a punishment of karet. But if we don't let things slide by, and with God's help, we'll be able to get through the holiday of Pesach, not eating chametz, and actually eating matzah. Not eating chametz means staying away from sin. Eating matzah means actually enjoying the fruits of our labor. And in my humble opinion, this is exactly the commandment of eating matzah throughout Pesach. We are constantly on the 3rd and the 4th and the 5th and the 6th and the 7th, and if you're outside of Israel, the 8th day of Pesach, saying to ourselves, we this year will not let things slide by. We will take affirmative action and do our best not to let things slide by, because timing is everything. I thank you very much for listening. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer. Please.
I do have a question. You said earlier about Kashrut and Rav Moshe Feinstein about the Yehoshiva. What was that?
The Gemara, the Mishnah says that you're not allowed to eat, you're not allowed to drink milk that was milked by a non-Jew, because maybe he mixed in non-kosher milk, and the Gemara talks about it, and the Code of Jewish Law codifies it, and quite frankly, we need to send Jews to all the places that they milk cows in order to supervise the milking of the cow, and that's what's commonly called, anybody? Chol of Yisrael. Rav Moshe Feinstein, who, as you know, functioned here in New York, in America, came up with a beautiful chiddush, and it's a novelty, and he said, basically, if the government of America is a just government, and they are supervising the plants, and the plants say, we have cows from milk. Excuse me, milks from cows. Excuse me for forgetting my English after 26 years in Israel. Then there's no way to fake you. And since the concern of the Gemara was that they may mix in non-kosher milk, you can obviate. You can go ahead and not be concerned with that, simply because the government looks after it. And therefore he said, if the government supervises the milk, and it's a just government, not a government you can pay off, not a government that takes money under the counter, then you can rely on it.
So that's the United States only?
Not the United States only, any just government around the world. Boy. Now, because I have graduates around the world, 168 in number, I can very nicely, not on tape, tell you which of the governments I would not necessarily trust. But thank God, just governments in Western countries with this freedom of speech and freedom of religion and freedom of other things, I think you can trust on the milk. When they say it's cow's milk, it's cow's milk. And therefore Hershey's, which is made from cow's milk, you can basically rely, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, on the fact that they didn't pour in any milk from a non-kosher animal, such as camel's milk or whatnot, and eat it. That's what Moshe Feinstein said. In general, in North America, all the kashrus agencies, OU, Chavke, COR out of Toronto, MK out of Montreal, they all rely on this tshuva of Moshe Feinstein. In Israel, a split. When it comes to real milk, they don't rely on it. Hershey's is made from real milk. When it comes to powdered milk, they do rely on it for another reason, and that is because of the Chazon Ish, who functioned also in the 20th century. He said that powdered milk couldn't have been part of the original enactment because there was no powdered milk in the time of our sages. So in Israel, if it's real milk that created something, they don't allow it into Israel the rabbinate, the chief rabbinate, doesn't allow it. If it's made out of powdered milk, they do allow it into the state of Israel. And they write on it, La'ochlei afkat chalav nochri, for those that eat the powdered milk.
I know what that means. Okay. I've always seen that.
Good to know. I personally grew up here in the United States when I was 11. Rav Moshe Feinstein, for me, was a fine posek that I rely on many things. I think you can definitely rely on him on this issue. And indeed, in North America, it's interesting that Chol of Yisrael, which is a Mishnah and a Gemara and codified in Jewish law, has become a Chumrah, a stringency, even though it's written in our primary sources, because Rav Moshe Feinstein really took the day on this issue.
I have a question. We were born in the 20th and 21st centuries. How is it that anything would allow us to be a partner in creation?
Creation is not something that was done and finished. When God created the world, He created an imperfect world. And we're constantly perfecting it every single day. As a matter of fact, our custom is to say Aleinu L'Shabeach after all the prayers. And when we leave the shul, the last words, one of the last words we say, is L'taken Olam V'Malchut Shakai. We should fix the world under the kingship of God. Which means many things. First of all, if everyone believed in the true kingship of God, a God that's just and right and also merciful, there would be no fundamentalism out there. And terrorism and stabbings on the streets of Jerusalem and Tel Aviv and everything we're experiencing right now. But secondly, it's to constantly perfect the creation of the world. So just to give you a small example of what I mean, there's a fine institution here in New York called Yeshiva University. There's a beautiful, beautiful day in history where they finally brought in a great Rosh Yeshiva from Europe in the beginning of the 20th century. Not to schnorrer money off of you, fundraise for his yeshivas in Europe. Not to come for a visit to North America and tell all the Jews off you're living in a terrible place, a treifa medina. But to teach Torah. Know what his name was? That's the name of the institution, but you know what his name was? Rav Palachik. Rav Moshe Palachik. Rav Moshe Palachik died in 1928 after being brought to America from Europe just to teach Torah from a little infection in his gums. Do you know why he died from an infection in his gums in 1928?
No penicillin.
There was no penicillin. Today, with one shot of penicillin, done, deal. You don't even think about it. You go to work, you feel something in your gums, on your lunch break, you go to your dentist gives you the shot of penicillin, that's the end of the story. He died in 1928 out of lack of penicillin. We have perfected the world, and today there's penicillin. That's an amazing discovery that has allowed us not only to prolong living, but to make life better. Imagine how penicillin can take care of a strep throat and many other illnesses out there. Unless your doctor tells you the terrible V word, you got penicillin. You know what the V word is, right?
Virus.
Virus. I like to say it's out of Yiddish, a virus. The doctor says, I don't know what you have, your sins must have been given to you, God gave you a sickness, I don't know what it is. Go home, drink some tea. And God help you. But unless he says the V word, penicillin and antibiotics, what a world. We perfected the world. And the fact that today I can sit here in Stony Brook and tomorrow morning, if I would like, I can upload this class and people in Australia and Venezuela and even in the Far East can listen to the Torah being taught here, is an amazing, amazing perfection of the world that we didn't have 20 years ago. So we're constantly perfecting the world and making it better. And that's why the Rokeach is able to say, if you don't let things slide by, you're constantly perfecting the world. Yes, Dr. Evan.
And the two psukim that you have on the top of your sheet.
Yes.
Matzot is spelled first with a vav and then without it. Why is it... two different spellings.
Sometimes the Torah writes in Ketiv Chaser, and sometimes in Ketiv Maleh. Ketiv Maleh means
I understand that.
With the Vav, sometimes the Ketiv Chaser. there are sometimes situations where our sages actually learn out things from it being written full or not full. Sometimes they say, don't know, that's the way God dictated the Torah to Moshe, and that's what's written down.
So in this case, we don't have a specific reason.
Not that I know of. There are Hasidic drushes on it, but I don't know anything in our sages. Of course, I can look after the class, but I don't know anything in it. In the Hasidic work, they talk about matzot being spelled. If you look at it, it can also be pronounced as mitzvot. So it can either be just a matzah, or it could be a mitzvah. It depends how you look at it and how you treat it and whatnot. Very nice, but I'm not so sure that's the pshat, the simple translation of the verses.
And that's a very interesting matzah.
No. Matzav with a vav, very nice.
Good.
Welcome to study book. Now you've arrived.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I thank you, the Richmonds, for hosting us, and I wish you many more years where you can continue to develop your community, and God willing, learn a lot of Torah together, and God willing, not let things slide by and can continue to perfect the world, so God willing, we can have a future, a beautiful future, of wonderful, steadfast Jewish families that continue this beautiful tradition until such time as which we can all be together in one place, at one time, with a proper Messiah that will come along, and indeed bring us that day where it's not day nor night, but rather total day, total perfection. Until that time, may we continue to develop many, many more steadfast Jewish families that continue these traditions. Thank you all very much.